Welcome back to Plot Pit, the show where we forge fiction from fact and folklore. William Atkinson here in our new studio space, the first time recording in this rebuilt studio. John LeMay is not here. He is on special assignment, so you are stuck with the sultry sound of my voice. Today, in the pit, let's begin the descent. We have a couple of questions that came in our email that specifically was addressed to myself. Next week, when John's back in, we will bring in some of the questions that was asked for John. In the meantime, two in particular we'll talk about right now. The first is, how were you inspired to create the podcast? Where did the idea come from? Well, for this particular listener, to answer that question, we have to roll the clock back to about 2017. You might have remembered in one of the earlier episodes, John and I were talking just a wee bit about this. And the idea for this particular podcast, its format, and all of that came from myself. And I was up really late at night, suffering from a really bad bout of insomnia. And I was scrolling through the news feed that I had. I'm rather a bit of a news junkie in many ways. And there was a article from Live Science about mummification of snakes, and or specifically reptiles in the Southwest. And there's a fungus that would infect specifically snakes and other reptiles, basically made them molt or shed their skin. And the photo they had kind of looked like as if the snake had turned into a mummy. And that was actually the title, something to that effect. It was like mummified snakes or look at this mummied snake or something of that nature. And it also coincided with the time when one of those extrasolar objects was passing through our solar system. I can't remember the name of it. It would have been 2017-ish because I remember the year rather well. There was some significant events that were going on at work at the time for my day job. So between the two of those and then the fact that I was reading a lot of H.P. Lovecraft and running a Call of Cthulhu role-playing game at the time, I instantly put all of this together and thought, ooh, the Return of the Serpent People. So in that moment, I kind of had the idea that, oh, it would be cool to have a podcast or a Discord server or something that was all about the creative brainstorming process of stringing the most odd news together and coming up with just stories. It was also part and parcel a bit of frustration of what's going on with Hollywood rehashing all the old classics and putting rather uninteresting spins on the genres. So overall, it was just, in my opinion, I've been really disappointed with a lot of what comes out of Hollywood. And it was kind of a thought of, well, you know, the best story is a story that you want to hear. So why not create it yourself, Will? So that's kind of where this came from. I enjoy the creative brainstorming process. I love tabletop role-playing games. And I guess you might even call it vocal improv. Because it's not really, you know, theatrics. Although I have done some community theater. And I love, I suppose it's the improv part of that. And just taking an idea and running it to its extreme for the sake of laughs or just general cutting up and everything. So to answer the question, where did the podcast come from? Well, it was about 5 years ago. And it came from the idea of, hey, you're a news junkie. You see all sorts of interesting news articles. And I'll be looking over at my wife and I'll say, hey, it would be really cool to have a story like that. So that's where the podcast idea came from. Now, I originally sat down and tried to do this 5 years ago, towards the end of 2017. I went out and I got the audio interface and a couple of mics. Actually, I tried out a couple of different ones and got OBS and got the camera all set up. And I tried doing it and it just didn't feel right. It felt like it needed a co-host. After all, I mean, the show was about brainstorming, and what fun is brainstorming if you don't have somebody to bounce an idea off of? So Right now, it does kind of feel a little bit awkward because my co-host, John, who's great for this program, is not here. So there's a, I don't know, an element missing, but I'm going to roll with it. So that's where the idea came from. I recognized that there was a need for a co-host. Unfortunately, I had nobody that was really interested in being on a podcast of this nature. I was running the Call of Cthulhu campaign. I was also at the time, or just before that, running a D&D campaign. I can't remember exactly how it all tied together. Cthulhu was the second one that I started running with that group. And there wasn't an interest in somebody taking on a co-host slot. So it kind of just sat in the back of my head. And being the individual that I am, I prayed and waited and was basically put in a position where I knew it needed a co-host, but it needed a very specific type of person. And when I came across somebody that I thought might be good, I would ask, and it just didn't really, the chemistry just wasn't right in that conversation. So we didn't get there. And I asked a couple of different people from, you know, some family members too, just general friends that I knew through tabletop RPG or whatever. Eventually, COVID hit. We ended up moving from where we were located originally to here in Roswell, New Mexico. And I started the William Atkinson Show, which was a show all about living here as kind of a transplant. And in the process of that, I met, you know, John LeMay, who is now the co-host of the show. And his interests are quite in line with mine. You know, oddities of history and everything else. And so he's very knowledgeable about the subject matter. And he is a very creative and talented writer and an author. So it just worked out. And he said, he came into the studio for the William Atkinson interview that I had him on. And we were talking about Billy the Kid and a little bit of the history around the Lincoln County War and, you know, other oddities with Pat Garrett and some of the stuff that was going on here during the early 1880s. And after the interview and everything for that particular show, I mentioned, hey, you know, I've got this other show, this other program I'm, you know, wanting to spin up called Plot Pit. And John thought I was talking about, you know, an episode or two. So He said that he would be really interested in being on this particular episode or the show. He said, you know, yeah, I'd really like to do that. So we scheduled the time. He comes in, sits down, and we hashed out episode one in something like 28 minutes. And the time just went by really, really quick. He looks across at the table from me and kind of shrugs his shoulder and says, you want to do another one? And I said, yeah. So that's where episode two came from. And originally, we didn't intend for him to be a co-host. It just sort of happened that way. And after about four or five episodes in, it was just like, John, you're becoming a fixture here in that seat. So why don't you be co-host? And he cordially agreed. So that's where the journey of Plot Pit from conception to execution actually happened. In the back of my head, I had, you know, a particular vision for a studio and everything. And the old house we were in, I went through, I remodeled it and redid the wiring with the intention of actually having the studio there. And we ended up moving into this space. I hodgepodged a catastrophe of a studio together, which is what we've recorded the 40 episodes thus far. And we did a huge sprint of pre-records a couple of weeks back before I took my business trip. Then when I got back from all of that, I spent two weekends actually, and we're still fine tuning, but basically treated the studio in a much better light to give it the proper sound treatment and everything that we needed. So I do apologize if the audio quality here is different. I hope it's better. There is a storm going on in the background. So if you hear some howling of wind or some other stuff, that gives you a little bit of an idea of where the show came from, the journey to get to a proper co-host, and I thank God and give him complete glory for the whole show. And I feel very blessed to be behind the mic on this one, or in front of the mic, actually. If I was behind the mic, it might sound a little bit like this. I do feel very blessed to be able to host this show and have such a creative co-host. I think John's a great fit for the concept here. Now, a little bit about what we plan to do. That was one of the other questions, was what is your long-term goal for the podcast? And where do you see this in 5 years? It's kind of a bonus question, I suppose. Maybe we'll save some of the other questions. Well, we will save some of the other questions for next week when we can have a little bit of get to know your host with John and I together. But I'll take this one. We are planning on some very special content, and more than just skeletonizing a plot from random stuff. We are in the process of working with a local individual here. We're not quite ready to announce exactly what it is, but a script is being written, a script has been written, and the sequel to the script is under production, and so we are talking about that. We also have plans for some other things, which we're going to get at the end of this, where we're producing either short stories or full-length novels and stuff. So we have plans to be more than just a, hey, here's some interesting historical commentary, and then here's a story thread that you might be able to take and run with. So 5 years from now, oh boy, considering the fact of my discontent with Hollywood in many, many areas, I would think that it would be lovely to actually own and operate a movie studio. But that might be just dreaming a little bit, you know, out of the box. So the other question that I'll field here today is, what is your favorite book, story, and what genre do you prefer? Well, that's kind of, I particularly cherry picked this question to headline or be a part of this episode, which I intend to release raw with very little editing. I'll do some audio cleanup. My preferred genre is dystopian fiction, apocalyptic dystopian fiction. I just find it fascinating, especially with the times that we live in, you know, between COVID and disinformation and social media and cancel culture and so much other stuff that's going on in the world today. It's fascinating. I was once told the classic curse is, may you always live in interesting times. And we certainly do. We live in interesting times. And I don't care which way you lean or your viewpoint and everything on the current events of the world or, you know, the events that led up to it. So much as it is an interesting time to live in. And we all feel it. And so my favorite novel that I go back to and have read multiple times is 1984 by George Orwell. I think I've mentioned that on this program a couple of times. I just find it a well-written read, and the story is just enthralling and very captivating for somebody with the mind that I have. I particularly enjoy Orwell's world there, the book within the book, and I'm specifically referencing the Goldberg book that the protagonist ends up getting his hands on and reading. And it basically outlines the whole of Oceania's and the other governments of the world in this fictionalized world, the whole outline of information control and their strategy on controlling the population. And it's fascinating. It's got misinformation in there. And what are we arguing about in social media in many ways as it relates to news? You know, disinformation or misinformation or fact checks and all of the other stuff. So it's quite interesting. And Orwell brought into play something that Aldous Huxley didn't. Orwell brought into his fictionalized world a technologically managed society, whereas Aldous Huxley in Brave New World was a little bit more pharmacological. So those are really my two favorite novels, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley and 1984 by George Orwell. And it boils down to that apocalyptic dystopian sort of social engineering. I just find it fascinating. And, you know, we've got Hunger Games, which is, you know, more modern take on that. Or you've even got Maze Runner, right? You know, to the people who love those books, I applaud you. They're great stories. I remember not terribly long ago on the Apple TV, I ordered the whole slot of Maze Runner as well as Hunger Games and watched them all through in a week. And they're great stories. But it also does fit within the world that I tend to gravitate to. I also really enjoy science fiction like Star Trek. Babylon 5 is one of my all-time favorite television shows. Great, great show if you've not seen it. J. Michael Straczynski, I doubt you're listening, knowing your Twitter FAQs and rules of engagement, but hats off to you on that. That was a really great, really great show. My favorite character is Londo Mollari and his antagonist there, Jakar. That is a dynamic duo of epic proportions. Wonderfully written. So without further ado, we'll leave the rest of the questions for next week when John and I can actually address them simultaneously in kind of a get-to-know-your co-host and or get-to-know-your host or your podcast better. In the meantime, going back to dystopian fiction, I have here a story that I've written at 1,931 words, assuming that I actually read each word exactly as I've written it here. But this was written about the same time, or this was originally written about the same time that I had came up with the idea of the podcast. I'd kind of gotten into a little bit of a niche of writing microfiction. And, between 500 to 2,000 words or 2,500 word stories, more of kind of like the story hook. Specifically, these were originally written as a means to spawn a campaign idea or an adventure idea for my tabletop groups. And this particular one I picked because of the questions that came in on my preferred genre and my favorite novels and books. So all rights reserved here. This one is for myself and the original content for the show, not to be reproduced without explicit permission. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy. Mr. Toad's Awakening by William Atkinson. The monotony of the cue was strengthened by the rhythmic ka-chunk, ka-chunk beat of the stamp pounded on the page of the cog's passport, followed by the line attendant's emotionless call, "Next, please," each beat coming as perfect as the click at the apex of a metronome. Without missing the beat, 20 years of intense call-and-response conditioning went to work. The cue stepped forward synchronously in perfect time, a symphony of collective movement harmonized as a mechanized widget, complete with the swish of pants and soft thunk of leather-soled shoes landing on tile. Not a soul averting their eyes from the gently caressed photon boxes, molding a vast universe of individual experiences cohesively into a singularity of collective consciousness. The ever-watchful overseer loomed above the herd in his ominous perch overlooking the terminal. Yet, not a single being was aware of his hawk-like presence, nor noticed the conformity. Nobody bumped, strayed, or deviated from their assigned path. There is beauty in such order, the overseer thought. With strained ears, a sense of satisfaction flashed over the overseer's face as the reverberating muffle of the herd's eyes blinking in time was detectable only to his discerning ear, plucking the sound out of the audible mix of the terminal song. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next please, swish, thunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. The overseer held a particular sense of pride, knowing only he could hear the hundreds of soft lips of flesh pushing through an oily layer over a field of corneas harmonizing in a collective thwip, providing microseconds of instantaneous respite for the individual from the dry existence of an invisibly insipid world. Mr. Toad stood still during the momentary stall of movement, waiting patiently for the line attendant's call to increment forward. Staring down at the photon box held in his hand, his fingers swiped up, down, left, right, up, left, obeying the prompts on the screen. He felt productive. He felt profitable. He felt valued. Mindless work is profitable work. The slogan of his training echoed deep in his unconscious mind as he swiped to the syllables of the university chant from years prior. Swish, thunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please! The herd incremented. Mr. Toad was thoroughly engulfed with his device. His thoughts were on point as they had been for years according to his training. He was a few calls away from surrendering his passport to the line attendant for the requisite daily stamp recording his obligatory commute to the office. That's when it happened. He hiccuped. "What was that?" Mr. Toad thought. The strange involuntary bodily convulsion startled Mr. Toad. He had never before experienced something so strange. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, the line attendant stamped one of the cog's passports and the emotionless call ran out. "Next, please." The herd obeyed the call and responded in like manner as they had many times before. Mr. Toad, still confused, hesitated for a moment, then consciously stepped forward. Hiccup. It happened again. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. This time, Mr. Toad was thrust forward with a dull, pointed jab from behind just under his right shoulder blade by a cog behind him, mindlessly obeying the call. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. The herd stepped forward, obeying the rhythm of the terminal song, and again Mr. Toad was jabbed under his right shoulder blade. Hiccup. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. The sudden convulsion sent curiosity through Mr. Toad's mind, distracting him from the digital world, throwing off the rhythm of his swiping. The display immediately disapproved with flashing red letters, game over, and an undeniably angry buzz. He hesitated again for a split second, then consciously stepped forward again. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. Then, with the sudden unexpected pressure again thrust under his right shoulder blade, Mr. Toad was forcibly lurched forward into the line attendant's presence. He blinked out of time. However, instinctively, his passport was already in hand, and the line attendant stamped it with the requisite ink in rhythm. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Mr. Toad, surprised by the current events, blinked again out of time from the herd, while the attendant called the cue forward in that cold, uninspiring tone. Next, please. Mr. Toad, captivated by the oddity of the curious events unfolding, again felt sudden force from behind under his shoulder blade. He found himself uncomfortably moving forward in a jerky motion, disharmonious from the herd. He felt a bit of pain in his shoulder and a pit at the bottom of his stomach. An ominous pressure looming over his shoulders suddenly cautioned his awareness as the crowd around him came into view. Instantly, he noticed each of the cogs in the herd had not one, but two eyes. "What is wrong with me?" he quietly muttered in his mind as his teeth clenched slightly. Hiccup. His face contorted in confusion. "What is that?" The line attendant continued the call in response. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. Jab under the shoulder blade, uncomfortable thrust forward. Hiccup. "What is going?" Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, next, please. Ow! Mr. Toad verbalized as his thoughts were interrupted by the sharp penetrating force of a photon box again thrust under his right shoulder blade in the now tender spot, followed by the full body thump of a line behind him, forcibly lurching him forward through the security gate onto the platform for the train. Reaching over his shoulder to rub the dull, pulsing pain, he spun around and gazed upon the gentleman behind him. The man's dress was requisite gray suit and tie, white shirt, trimmed in matte black belt and shoes, all followed to the letter of corporate issue. Research had shown matte black leather shoes and belt scuffed less during the day when compared to a gloss finish, ensuring visual conformity and thus unity. The man's head was tilted down at the standard corporate angle to view the flashing photon box held in his hand, optimally swiping rhythmically with his finger, all the while possessing a cold stare that would chill a cup of coffee straight from the pot. "Do you mind moving forward?" was followed by a prompt and cold, "Thank you." The man hadn't even noticed Mr. Toad was actually looking at him. Hiccup. "Ticket, please." The cold call came from behind Mr. Toad. He turned around. The conductor, wearing corporate issue uniform, had his face down with the hole punch at the ready, motioned twice with all his fingers in an anticipating give-it-to-me manner. As Mr. Toad's thoughts came to bear, realizing what was requested, the conductor moved the hole punch into position, clicked it. The cold voice called out, "Seat 33B, an hour and 10 to Lorixville, thank you," reaching forward as if to return Mr. Toad's ticket complete with a hole punch. He waved Mr. Toad along. "Hiccup, ticket please." The conductor called out again, unaware Mr. Toad hadn't moved. A sudden jab from behind, and bump, lurched Mr. Toad forward again, and the click of the hole punch insulted Mr. Toad's ears. This time, the treble end of the audible pop was dulled a bit under the presence of an actual paper ticket. seat 34B, an hour and 10 to Larksville. Thank you. Mr. Toad stepped sideways out of the queue, narrowly avoided being jabbed and subsequently knocked about again as the cold call, "Ticket please," instructed the queue to increment forward. He looked around. Nobody noticed. Slowly setting his corporate-issue gray canvas satchel aside, he gazed across the herd, the terminal, and the weight of the flashing photon box pulled his arm to his side. In between hiccups, which he now realized were in time to the ka-chunk, ka-chunk, "next, please" call, the line attendant's stamping of passports, and the eerie unison of collective movement, he allowed his mind to drift. Hiccup. He took a deep breath. A sense of wonder tainted with that rotten pit of anxiety filled his lungs. He felt unusually heavy. He had awoke from the undead state of consciousness fueled by the droll existence of conforming monotony. For the first time in his life, Mr. Toad's eyes were open. For the first time, he was breathing life, not merely living death. He raised his hand to his face and gazed on the wrinkles in the back of his knuckles and the trimmed, clean fingernails. He rolled his hand over and noticed the long lines on the palm of his hand contouring the base of his thumb's controlling muscle. He flexed his hand to his fist, tensing his forearms, then stretched its fingers out wide as they could go, and relaxed them into a soft, half-curled cup. The sensations were oddly satisfying. Hiccup. His posture bounced slightly upward with the convulsion. He was brought back into the moment of the terminal's song and the realization that the herd had eyes. He panically looked about at the cogs, taking careful note as if he was being noticed. For the moment, he felt secure that no one was aware he stood alone between two incrementing lines, every face down, mindlessly staring and swiping at the photon box carefully held in the corporate trained position. Thump, 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 thump. Mr. Toad was suddenly aware. His heart was pounding in his chest. He took note his heart was beginning to race with each passing cog. His breath and his heart seemed to be in competition towards some unknown finish line. Hiccup. That strange, exhilarating feeling momentarily snapped him back to his self-awareness. He glanced across the herd from his new angle of perception, and he noticed he was out of place. Panic of being alone set in, while the fear of watchful eyes fell over him. Standing still, breathing heavy, with a panicked heart rate, there between the two dwindling lines as he allowed his mind to process the situation. Time passed, and the last few cogs boarded their obligatory morning commute to the office. His breathing slowed as the final passenger boarded and the train departed from the platform. The terminal quieted, and he could hear the tick-tock, tick-tock of the old rail clock hung from above the ticketing counter. He stood alone, taking a calming breath as he allowed his mind to wrestle the oddities of what had just transpired. It was in this moment Mr. Toad realized he was not merely some cog in a well-managed social machine. He was a unique individual possessing a singularly unique perspective. He had always obeyed the commands of corporate, never questioning his existence or his meaningful place in society, his work and contributions to the greater good. In the entirety of Mr. Toad's state of being, he had never before asked himself, "Why am I here? What am I doing? What do I want?" Yet, in the last hour standing alone at the terminal, as it emptied itself into the now departed train, those were the only thoughts captivating his mind. He noticed something in his hand and consciously let go of it, knowing precisely what it was. Overhead, the overseer smiled, turned, and then with a puzzled face jerked back around on his perch. He nearly had missed it. Can it be? A cog not on the train? He blinked and watched jaw-dropped as Mr. Toad released his grip on the photon box in his hand, letting the process of gravity take hold, and the sudden smash on the floor's tile cracked the screen. Mr. Toad turned, noticed the exit, and began walking towards the glass doors, leaving behind his satchel. So, I hope you enjoyed that. There's actually a lot of motivation behind this, kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, the dystopian world and everything, but specifically, one of the conversations that came out with a guest that I had on the William Atkinson Show with John Arthur was the topic about smartphones at the dinner table. There is a noticeable quality difference of conversation and quality of experience when it comes to your dining, either at home or at a restaurant, when you put the phone away. So in any case, I hope you have enjoyed your 35 minutes with me. I'm not exactly sure about where we are, but I know we're past the half hour mark. In the meantime, William Atkinson here. John LeMay is on special assignment. I will have another micro story for you on our Thursday episode. So if you are interested in being on the show, having your work read either by myself or John or somebody else, or you want to read it yourself, or if you just want to be a part of one of our plot pit brain hashes that we do and to just talk about your work, send us an email, submissions@plotpit.com. If you have feedback, questions for either John or myself, go ahead and send us an email and let us know your thoughts. You can also catch us on Discord. We have several authors who have been on the show out on our Discord channel. You can email us for a link or find it in the show description below. You can follow us on Twitter @PlotPit. For now, I do believe that's everything. I hope that you have enjoyed getting to know me a little bit better as your host, a little bit more about the show, the idea of where it came from, and the story of Mr. Toad's awakening. All rights reserved. All right, folks, for now, goodbye from Roswell, and we'll catch you around.